Well, hello there, listeners.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the first episode of my talking blog. I'm broadcasting this from Belmore, New York. It's Sunday, May 31st, 2020. I say that for posterity because the session will be archived, but also because after being quarantined for over 10 weeks, it helps to be reminded of what day it is and what the date is. So I hope that these 30 minutes will offer some relief from the concerns of the day. We certainly have some serious stuff going on. One Facebook post asked if anyone else was jealous of the astronauts who got to leave the planet yesterday. Well, we can't all leave the planet, but we can take a little travel back in time. My name is Linda G. Nanos. I'm the author of 40 Years of PMS. One reader nicknamed me Notorious LGN. I'll leave it to each of you to figure out if the nickname fits or not. But there is no doubt that some of the stories I write could qualify me for that. Anyway, each week in this series, I'm going to be blog talking about the subjects covered in the 18 chapters of my book. 40 Years of PMS was written in 2005 when I was navigating menopause. I didn't publish it at the time, but I did end up updating it in 2018, and I added another 13 years of very valuable life experience. So everything happens for a reason, and I'm really happy that it was published when it was. I'm going to be peppering my blog talking with thoughts about 2020 to bring it all up to date. So today what I want to do, it's a short 30 minutes. You might have noticed there's a call-in number, but because of the shortness of the episode, I'm not going to do a call-in. If as we go along, we become good friends and you want to do call-in, you'll let me know. So today what I want to do is introduce the book, and then I'm going to do some blog talking about Chapter 1. My book doesn't begin with an introduction like most nonfiction writings, but I call it an invitation because it's an invitation to share memories, experiences, and feelings. From the feedback that I have from my readers, they say that the stories are relatable and do trigger memories that you can share with others. Now, I know that there are some men tuning in, and I don't want to scare you off with all the hormone talk, but just consider this as a great opportunity to glimpse inside the inner thoughts and feelings of the significant females in your life. I was at a book signing at an independent bookstore last year, and unfortunately it has since closed and gone the way of other independent bookstores that can't survive the competition of Amazon Prime. But there was a man at this book signing who said, "It must be strange to be a woman and feel different every day." He was referring to the monthly cycle that includes bloating, moodiness, cramps, and ovulation pain, and all those might-all moments. But there's a much bigger picture that extends throughout our lives to the broader hormonal stages. We go through menstruating, pregnancy, maybe a nursing, and maybe we repeat that, maybe once, maybe twice, maybe several times. And then we continue on until we hit our late 40s and 50s, and then we get hot flashes and night sweats. We're into menopause. In my book, I refer to menopause as the hormonal finish line. But all the while that we are going through these changes, we're functioning as wives, mothers, some of us members of the workforce, and if we get to be so lucky, grandmothers. Excuse me. Women of any walk of life can relate to each other about these physical and emotional stages. The comedian Amy Schumer was a guest host on Saturday Night Live, and she described a scene where she was out at a restaurant with her friends, and she realized she needed a tampon. So she mouthed the words, "Does anyone have a tampon?" And every gal at the table reached into her purse and produced one, any brand that she wanted. And it was the sisterhood of the tampon. So I have learned that even after menopause, the female issues keep on coming. I had one recently, and a friend referred me to her gynecologist. Another friend told me about her experience and her sister's experience with the same issue. And it was great to know I wasn't alone. Women talk about our bodies. I think it's a lot more rare for a man to discuss male issues like prostate or, even worse, erectile dysfunction. We share about relationships and children and not just the latest scores and the latest trade of an athlete. And while women will differ on politics, religion, and worldviews, our hormones are our common denominator. So it seems fitting that the first scene of my book is set where else? In a gynecologist's office, where I am declared fully menopausal. I take that moment to reflect on the journey. Now, depending on your age, you might remember sanitary napkin belts. These contraptions looked like garter belts with metal fasteners, and we strung these huge pads through them with flaps on either end that we secured through the metal fasteners and snagged them on the teeth. And then we wore these bulky pads around, drenched in blood all day. I'm sorry if the image is too strong, but I'm looking back and I feel bad for my former self, because it turns out that these self-adhesive pads did not come into play until the 1980s. So I went through junior high and high school with these horrible contraptions. So today we have these super thin maximum absorbency pads. They're self-adhesive, and we even have underwear that is absorbent, and you can even dispense with these pads. So in my book, I describe the pads as being the size of blackboard erasers. And quote, "I didn't appreciate the fact that the pads were actually an improvement over the personal hygiene of my grandmother's generation. They used old cloth cut into rags as pads. The expression 'on the rag' lived on in the vernacular long after the mode of hygiene disappeared." That's the end of the quote. This is not an audible book. I don't plan to do a lot of reading, but every once in a while I will insert a quote from my book. So when synthetic pads were first being marketed, women were embarrassed to buy them. So Kotex put pictures of women in gowns on the boxes. And before I understood anything about menstruating, I wanted to own one of those boxes, and I used to beg my mother to buy one for me. Anyway, so I end my reflections on this journey, this hormonal journey, with an invitation to an imaginary slumber party where we're going to share experiences in this spirit of female solidarity. At the end of the book, there are talking points for each chapter, and I really would love to see women forming sharing groups that would be non-judgmental and just a chance to provide mutual support for the journey that we take. Now, the first chapter of 40 Years of PMS has a warning: adult content. Now, the subtitle of the book is, quote, other musings of an aging hippie. So that alone should give you an idea of the content. So maybe you are a hippie, or your parent was, or you're familiar with the hippie experience through what you've read or heard. I graduated high school and went to college in 1970. Woodstock took place in 1969, so this was right on the heels of Woodstock. It was a time of experimentation with drugs and sexual freedom. I've got it all there in Chapter 1. The nudity, the cross-country trip in a van, the LSD, and the casual sex. I look back, and I don't even recognize myself. So, it was a strange time. One of the aspects that was unique about my personal experience was that I was a language major. I took every language program, every foreign studies program that my college offered. I went to a pre-freshman language program in Germany, a summer program in Mexico, Cuernavaca, summer program in Mexico City, a semester in Cuernavaca, Mexico, and a semester in Madrid, Spain. When I graduated, I worked for the summer and earned enough money to take a trip because I was still smitten with the travel bug. So I went to a travel agency, we used to have those back in the day, and I started looking for the most exotic destination that I could find. And I found it. There was a brochure to the Galapagos Islands. Now, the Galapagos Islands are owned by Ecuador. So I booked a flight to Ecuador and a cruise on what I thought, or what I later found out, was a converted icebreaker. Talk about no frills. So I went to the Galapagos Islands. I picked bananas in the Amazon River Basin in Ecuador. I had adventures on pyramids and swimming with seals. It was really pretty amazing. But when I look back at these adventures, I shudder at how risky they were. But back then in the 70s, young people were hitchhiking across Europe and staying in youth hostels. And we all traveled with our Europe on $5 a day book as our tour guide. Out of curiosity, I wanted to find out, what would the 2020 version of that book be? And sure enough, someone wrote a follow-up. I think he entitled it Europe on 5 Wrong Turns a Day. And he tried to follow the guide to do Europe on the cheap. So what he determined is that you could possibly travel through Europe, staying in very inexpensive places and traveling by train for $100 per day, a little less than $5 per hour. Anyway, we all thought Europe was a giant Disneyland with castles and the money was like Monopoly money. It probably was safer then than it is now, but it wasn't completely safe, and we were all in maybe some group delusion. There was one situation where I planned to meet a friend coming from different places in Nice, France, to travel together to Paris. We picked a hotel out of our $5 a day guide as our meeting place. So I arrived in Nice at night. It was dark. I didn't speak French. I showed the name of the hotel to the taxi cab driver, showing him my book, and he drove me to this hotel, which it turned out was closed. Now, I have a sneaking suspicion the driver might have known that fact, because when I got out of the taxi, he got out after me and pinned me against the wall. I managed to fight him off, make a big enough stink to scare him away, and I found another hotel. The next day, I went to the American Express office where we used to exchange money for traveler's checks, and it was a point where people used to leave messages for each other, and sure enough, my friend was there, and all was saved. So I don't think the younger generations today are taking similar risks. It may be because the world has become a scarier place. remember, I'm talking about the 1970s. In the 1980s, the AIDS epidemic came along, and it put the big kibosh on the whole casual sex scene. Then came 2001, and with 9/11 attacks, we all felt the insecurity about our safety, and our government created the expansive Department of Homeland Security. And now, here we are, it's 2020, and we have a global pandemic. In the 50 years since the Woodstock Cultural Revolution, with this pandemic, our society has come to a completely opposite extreme. I'm sure you've seen pictures of Woodstock, maybe from the cover of the album, the music album, but it showed a sea of over 400,000 people gathered together in this communal intimacy at Woodstock, sharing blankets, joints, and who knows what else. Now, I won't say that will never happen again because trends seem to bounce from one extreme to another in this pendulum effect. But now we have social distancing, and nothing could be more opposite for the Woodstock generation than social distancing. We're defined by the life events that we experience, especially when we're launching into adulthood. My parents' generation was sometimes referred to as the greatest generation. They were raised during the Depression, and they emerged into their adult lives during World War II. When they came out of these experiences, they were shaped with frugality from the Depression and patriotism, and they had a very strong sense of community service. They were big volunteers. Well, now we have a generation, the pandemic generation, that will forever remember that they were the generation that had virtual graduations. There were no senior proms. There was a very different experience coming into adulthood. This is a generation that in the future is going to have virtual happy hours and greet with elbow bumps instead of hugs. Skinny dipping with strangers in a lake? Well, that sort of sounds like bathing in a petri dish. So, being a part of the Woodstock generation, it shaped a lot of things about my life. It led me to be a more permissive parent, and I had a higher than normal tolerance for risky behavior. I imagine that someone coming out of this pandemic age is going to approach life more fearfully, and they certainly are going to raise a generation of germaphobes. So I was out for a walk the other day, and I passed a pandemic birthday celebration for a four-year-old girl. She was on her porch in her little ballet tutu, and there were huge letters across the lawn saying, "Happy 4th birthday." There was a chalk rainbow in the driveway. People were driving by with balloons honking and wishing her a happy birthday. Some were stopping to deliver gifts to her parents. So as I continued on my walk, I began to project, what would a four-year-old birthday party be for the children of the pandemic generation? So maybe we're projecting 10 to 15 years in the future, married now with children. So they have a birthday party, and the mother begins to sing happy birthday, and the four-year-old looks confused. Why are we singing happy birthday? We're not washing our hands. And then you only sing it once. We're not finished until we sing it twice. And what about birthday candles? There will be no birthday candles on any cake. Imagine what a bad idea this is. You put one or more candles on a cake, and you tell the four-year-old, who is carrying every germ known to the preschool class, to blow on the cake that's then going to be cut up and served to their friends. Bad idea. That made me think about other bad ideas, and maybe this is a bit of a digression, but I thought about bobbing for apples. So you've got this communal tub, and everybody puts their face in it and tries to bite at apples, and the one that gets away, that you've bitten into, floats away and somebody else bites into it. Well, I had ruled out bobbing for apples a long time ago, but definitely that one is out. Anyway, I digress, and I'm going to get back. So I was very proud that I launched my kids into independent living. I felt that was a big accomplishment. But now there are many extended families sheltering in place with adult sons and daughters. And I wonder if that will have a long-range impact. Some may find it wasn't so bad being home with mom and dad as adults, and a lot less expensive. So I see the events, these peak events of our lives, shaping us into the types of adults and the types of lives we will have going forward. So I have a Facebook page for 40 years of PMS, and the word 40 is spelled out, not written as a number. And I hope that you'll send me a message and give some feedback of your thoughts on this. I told you about the talking points on this that are at the end of the book for each chapter. And for chapter one, the talking points include what was your first kiss, losing your virginity, and driving your parents crazy, which we all know there is a payback factor for that one. But I want to add, and you can pencil it in if you have your copy of the book, what were the defining events of your generation? Now, you would think reading about these adventures that I wrote about and the travels that it sounds all so exciting. But despite the excitement of it all, I was lonely. The passage I'm going to read to you took place on my way home from the Galapagos Islands. On the airplane back to New York, I looked out the window at tufts of clouds that floated in the air between me and the expanse of the ocean below. I remembered how I had sat alone one starlit night on the bow of the icebreaker, watching it cleave the waves of the Pacific Ocean. I had felt the pangs of a cosmic loneliness and vowed never to be so far away from home again. So that reflection sets the stage for the next chapter. The next chapter is all about looking for meaningful relationships to create a long-term bond of marriage and family. So on that journey, I developed a strong bond with author and motivational speaker, Dr. Wayne Dyer. I had a catastrophic relationship with a young man who I will just refer to as he who shall not be named. And interestingly, I learned in the past year that each of them wrote about me in books that they published. So that's to be revealed in the next episode. I hope you'll be tuning in next week. I plan to do this every week at 5 o'clock. And I hope that you will check out the book, which is available on Amazon.com if you haven't already read it. And for now, I will just say to all of you that you should stay safe. stay healthy, and tune in next time. Be well. Bye now.